Avos Perek Gimel, Mishnah Tesvav 3:15, and in some Mishnahs it's 3:11. Here we have Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i. This means Rabbi Elazar from the town of Modi'in. That was the same town from which the Hanukkah rebellion began with the Matsyahu and his boys. But don't get confused. This Rabbi Elazar HaModa'i lived in the time of the Bar Kokhba revolt. So you're talking about 300 years dividing those two events, so don't get confused. But he is famous because he was a relative of Shimon Bar Kokhba, and later on, essentially, they told Bar Kokhba that his cousin, Rabbi Elazar, was somehow like a treasonous, working against him, working with the Romans, and he ended up having his cousin killed, which was a sort of a major turning point in terms of the support he had from the rabbis, etc. In any case, that's, I don't think, so relevant to the Mishnah here. The Mishnah here has an overarching theme, which I'll try to explain. I'll read you inside the Mishnah first. It says, "Hamechalel es hakadshim," someone who desecrates the sanctified things that belong to the Beis HaMikdash, "V'hamavaze es hamoados," and somebody who disgraces the moadim, the holidays, festivals, "V'hamal ben pnei chaver barabim," someone who embarrasses his friend in public. I'll go back and sort of do each one sort of technically in a moment. The person who annuls the covenant of Avram Avinu, his memory is a blessing. And somebody who literally means reveals fasts of the Torah, that's not according to the halacha. Again, I'll explain each thing separately. Even though it's such a person, if he has Torah and good deeds, still, ein lo chelech l'olam haba, he'll have no portion in the world to come. So that's obviously a very severe statement, and one that needs explanation. So first of all, this seems to contradict the Mishnah we have in the beginning of the 10th Perek, Perek Chelech, let's call it, of Sanhedrin, which says, kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelech l'olam haba, every Jew has a portion to the world to come, and it's le'olam haba, like to the world to come, because like it's his ticket in. Now, if that's the case, the question is, why would these people not have a portion like everybody else? So I think the best way to understand this Mishnah in the big picture, forget the details of each of the five cases, is a similar kind of issue. You know, you have this, you know, this fellow, his name is Jack, and Jack is like the nicest guy, and he does everything right by everyone. He's always there to help, and he's, you know, got his hands always full with doing kindness for other people. But the thing is, Jack doesn't believe in God. So the Rama and Baskins, the Mishnah there in Chelek there talks it out. Such a person has no Chelek Olam Haba. He doesn't believe in Hashem. He won't have a place in the world to come. Now, that seems sort of like unfair. This poor guy, he's a good guy. He's the nicest guy. He's the best guy. There's everything good for everybody. So like, how come he has no place in heaven? So the short answer is that every good deed needs to get rewarded. But the problem is this fellow, he has no relationship with Hashem because he doesn't believe in Hashem. And the essence of what goes on in Olam Haba is the experiencing of that relationship that one developed with Hashem. So if he has zero relationship, he's repudiated Hashem's existence during his lifetime. So then there's just like, there's no point of connection. There's no common ground. So he sort of has no place there. He's like, be a fish out of water up there in Olam Haba. So he won't have a place up there. It's not a punishment. It's just a necessary consequence of not having the basic requirements in terms of, you know, the kalim, the abilities to deal with that existence. You know, he doesn't have the tools. So the similar idea over here, the notion of what goes on down here is that there's a hookup. We live in a Olam Ha'asiyah, the world of action, and we deal with material things all day. We have a body and we deal with all sorts of physical things. And that's all we deal with. We never see non-physical things. We never touch or smell or taste non-physical things. But we're aware they exist. And they exist at least in our mind's eye. And the spiritual underpinnings that exist behind the scenes, behind that sort of like that mask of the physical world, are our ticket, our connection to the other side upstairs to the called Olam Haba, okay, to the spiritual world. So that phenomenon, that phenomenon of being hooked up to the beyond is called Kedusha. That's what Kedusha is. That's the definition of the word. When we say Hashem is Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvosav, Hashem is Mekadesh us, sanctified us. He's Mekadesh us with his mitzvahs. What that means is that he said, listen, Hashem said, down here, you keep kosher or shake a lulav or, you know, make kiddush on Friday night or give tzedakah. And that action is actually hooked up to the spiritual world. And it's building your connection. There's a direct hookup. You may not see it with your eyes, but it's there. That's what kedusha is. In fact, asher kedushan b'mitzvosa, the word mitzvah really has two separate explanations. One is mitzvah, like tzivui, it's a command, but also tzavta, it's like a connection. Okay, it's the connection being built. So that's true with everything. We talk about something having kedusha, something is sanctified. It means there's a special hookup to the above. Okay, so if a person totally repudiates the notion of kedusha, he acts as if it doesn't exist, so then he's very much like the person just exists as living as if there's no Hashem. The basic connection and ticket in to the spiritual world that exists when one, you know, sloughs off his body. The soul is living right now in a piece of meat, right? Here you are, but you'll die, and the piece of meat in which you're living will go on the ground and rot like meat does, like every other animal, but your soul continues on because it's hooked up. Right, if the soul is kadosh, it's a chelak l'kam yimal. It's connected up to the shemaim, and like it'll continue on over there. I'm not talking about tchias mason later on. That's a different point for a different time. The point is, if a person repudiates, rejects, ignores, doesn't see, is oblivious to kedusha, that it doesn't exist, so then that's going to be very difficult for him, or impossible for him to have a chelak l'mahaba, because the basic notion of that there is a hereafter and the things on here affect up there, and he's connecting himself to there. You know, he severed that connection. So that's the theme of this Mishnah here. There are certain things where a person can relate to them as purely gufani, purely material, physical things. But if a person is a materialist and he says there's nothing in this physical world beyond the physical components, then he has no chelak olam haba because he severed the connection. He has no place there. He has no way to relate to it. Your identity as a human being is a function of your bechira, your choices. So if a person makes no choices based on the notion that there is a kedusha behind the scenes that hooks things up to the above, so then he has no connection. So when he dies, the Torah Masim Tovim don't have a way to be manifest because he has no connection. There's no to this notion of kedusha of hookup to the beyond. So these are five specific examples where, on the surface of things, it looks like a physical object, but we say this is where kedusha is present. These are different categories of kedusha, if you will, or categories of places where kedusha exists. And if a person ignores these things, and worse than that, sort of actively repudiates them, he undermines them, so he's disconnecting himself from the implicit, you know, the kedusha is there, so then he's severed the connection. And that will mean he won't have a place, won't have a connection. So here we have these five things. First, we have hamachales akadshim. So kadshim really come in two varieties. Either it means like something actually would go on the Mizbeach, a sacrificial offering, you know, like you actually have this sheep, which is going to be brought as a shlamim. That's one kind of kedusha. But there's also kedusha of this berek abayis. A person consecrates, says, you know, a person has a t-shirt, and he says, I want to give this t-shirt to Hashem, so I'm being makdish my t-shirt. Okay, then the t-shirt will go to the gizbar, and it's like it's got a lesser kedusha, but it has a kedusha as well. Now, if a person is mechal kachim, that means he treats something which is sanctified as if it's not sanctified. So the way the bartender explains the first case is, you know, even if you've got this, you know, this sheep, the sheep has now been consecrated as a korban, it's going to be brought as this, you know, shlamim, whatever it is. And then if a person is metame the korban, or he makes a nosar or pigle, he does the kinds of things which intentionally invalidates the korban, treating as if there's nothing special that is a, you know, korban from Lashon the karev is to draw close, nothing which is connecting him up to Hashem here. This is just a goat. He just sees a sheep. So if he just sees a sheep and it treats like that, he doesn't care if it becomes tameh and pigla and nosar and the like, he doesn't care to do me'ila, whatever the story is, doesn't care about treating it with the sanctity, with the kedusha it has. So then he's like sort of sever that connection. And that's true even for berek abayis. So if it's just a t-shirt, the t-shirt, once it's been consecrated, he's makdish it, the owner is. So then now it like belongs to Hashem, so to speak. It's like invested with a special sanctity. So if the guy ignores that and just wears the t-shirt, if it's a regular t-shirt. So again, he's sort of actively severed that connection of kedusha. So that's going to have consequences. Similarly, if hamavaze esa moados, one who disgraces the moados, or like the holidays. We're specifically here talking about even chol hamoed, meaning the intermediate days of Sukkot and Pesach, which, you know, they're not, there's no Isra of Malacha per se in the generic sense, but there is still an Isra of Malacha on a, that's not necessary. So this is important. In other words, everyone knows you can't do work on, you know, on the first day of Pesach or the first day of Sukkot and the like, but or the last days for that matter. The middle days are just a Tuesday afternoon. So you're not allowed to do malacha on the middle of the week of Pesach on Tuesday either, unless it's you know, a tzorach for the moed and necessary for the holiday or the like. Okay, there's not going to do the halachas of that right now, but it's restricted. It's a machlokas rishonim. Is it isur doraisa? Does the Torah restrict doing malacha on a regular Tuesday in the middle of Chol HaMoed? Or is it only the Rabbanan? Let's say it's the Rabbanan. The point is, we're saying that there's a sanctity here in time, and it goes without saying, if you're talking about, you know, the actual holidays, you know, if you're talking about actually Pesach or Sukkot or Shavuos or Shemini Atzeres, for sure, Shabbos, of course those have Kedusha, but even Chol HaMoed, which there's a whole aspect here. So you're looking at it's just Tuesday afternoon in the middle of the week, you know, between the holidays of, you know, of Sukkot, whatever it is. So you don't take it with the seriousness and you don't consecrate it. Either Bartzer brings two kind of ways. Either you do a malach that's not allowed, so that's forbidden, or even if you don't eat and drink as you would on a Yom Tov. Yom Tov, you know, people are careful to have at least one Suda. My Rebbe was sure, Machbet Lenowitz, Zatzal, to have one Suda of Basar V'yayin each of the 7 days of Sukkot, etc. So if you just, you know, you treat it like a regular Tuesday, so then you're relating it and you're treating it as if there's no Kedusha here, no Kedusha in time. And by doing so, that's a very essential part of the way we relate to Hashem, not just Kedusha and the Makom HaMikdash related to sacrificial and you know, basic Mikdash activities, which is the Kadshim, but also here in time, if you don't relate to this Kedusha in time, so again, you're sort of severing that very important connection, which will undermine one's ability to have a Chelek Olam Haba. Then you have Hamalbin Pnei Chaver Baram, a person who humiliates his friend in public. Literally, Malbin Pnei Chaver means to whiten the face of his friend. So we're talking here about a person who gets humiliated. So, you know, what happens first, their face gets, you know, ruddy and red because they're embarrassed. The cheeks get, you know, they blush. And then when they realize they can do nothing about it, like the blood drains from the face, they turn, you know, they go white. So that's the mission is referring to by Malbin Pnei Chavero. But the point is, you're humiliating the person. And Chazal actually have terrible things to say, I'm sure you're aware, that embarrassing someone is almost like killing them in ways that's worse than killing them. Some Rishonim take it seriously to the point of saying it's an Isser Doraisa, that's Yargva Yavor, you should sooner die like Tamar than embarrass somebody. Others say, no, that's not literally the case. But whatever it is, it's in some ways it's worse. Why? Because obviously dying is as bad as it gets, but you only die once. If you really humiliate somebody, they kind of relive that moment again and again and again. So it's like an ongoing, repeated death. And it's sort of analogous to dying because the bad part of Gehenna, when a person dies, when they go to face, you know, the consequence of their actions, the experience there is one of humiliation, where you see the vast gap between what you could have been and what you actually were. And that is very humiliating. That's the definition of humiliation, right? So when people see what you really are, and you were expecting something much better. So humiliating somebody is like killing them. I don't think it literally means it, like I said, because even though Chazal talk, like, you know, the blood draining from their face is like a little mini shechita, like killing them. But obviously, if you really cut someone's face with a knife and the blood drains out and they don't die, you're not a murderer. So draining the blood is not. It's a simon. It's a sign of the tremendous emotional distress one goes through, that the face goes white, the blood draining from their face. The point is, that's a terrible thing to do. And in the context here, the point is that we're looking at a person as being a tzelem Elokim, a human being. Is the greatest repository of Kedusha that there is in this world. And if you don't relate to them that way, and you to the contrary, you mavaz it, you humiliate it, you embarrass and disparage it, so you've rejected the notion of there being, you know, Kedusha in your fellow human being. Every person is a tzelem Elokim. I heard a story on Shabbos recently. Rav Avishai David told me he went to 1972 to get a bracha, and he was in Panovich, to get a bracha from Rav Yeruchim Lubavitch, and he was standing up, and Rav Yeruchim was sitting, and Rav Yeruchim made him sit down. And Rav David said, okay. He was a kid. He was like 20, whatever. He said, but why sit down? So the Mashgiach said to him, how can I sit here and give you a bracha when the Atzelem Elokim is standing? You have to sit down to be on the same level as me. So I don't know who he was, Rav David was whoever he was just, you know, Avishai, the 20 years old, you know, coming, but he's Atzelem Elokim. And that's every human being is Atzelem Elokim. So if a person's Malbim Pnei Chavero, he humiliates his fellow, He's disregarding that notion of Kedusha that is pregnant in every person. And again, the same as other ways, you are therefore severing that connection and forfeiting the ability to have a connection proper to Olam Haba. Then you have Vahamefer Briso Shel Avram Avinu Alav HaShalom. This is to deny or annul the covenant of Avram, Bris Mila, on a human being. So some learn it means that a person never got a bris as a child and then chooses not to as a grown-up. That sort of disgraced it. Others learn, this is easier to understand for me, is that we're talking here about a practice they had in Hellenistic times, certainly the 2nd century BC and the like, where people, to fit into Goyishtik Hellenist society, they would do sports naked, and if you have a bris mila and you're a man, everyone could see you're a Jew, and then you'd be excluded out. So they actually underwent a surgery. Okay, it's called, in Hebrew, they call it Moshech Es Orlaso, to pull down, to cover the orla. It's actually like a medical procedure, if you will, called epispasm. It was a thing. It was a widespread thing people did to sort of remove the mark of them being mahul, as circumcised as Jews. So the point here again is that the human being, the drive to procreate, is also Kedusha. It's invested with Kedusha. It's something which hooks you up to the beyond. And again, like all these other things, you can just see a goat, and you can just see a t-shirt, and you can just see a Tuesday afternoon, and you can just see some guy standing up in front of you, and you also can see just your body is like any other biological creature. Cows also make babies, and so you could be the same kind of thing. Again, ignoring the Kedusha that's present in you, but here, there's a tremendous koach of Kedusha that's present in the context of marriage, and to sort of deny that, again, you're denying the place where Kedusha exists, and so the same kind of problem, you're sort of forfeiting your ability to have a proper connection to Olam Haba. Finally, we have Hamagala Panim B'Torah Shloka Halacha, which means literally one who reveals facets of Torah that are not according to the Halacha. Here what we're speaking about is the schools of thought, which were actually quite prevalent in the end of Bayesheni time, most notably in and around the city of Alexandria, which is like the largest Jewish city outside of Yerushalayim, there in Egypt, where there were the large schools of thought, you know, we're talking about people, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of people subscribing to it, that really looked at the Torah as like an allegorical work, so that's open sort of, you know, metaphorical interpretation, and all of a sudden the laws of kashas just become, you know, metaphors for self-discipline and for health and the like. So the bartender brings an example. There's a prohibition of passing your seed through the fire to Molech. One of the 613 mitzvahs has to do with like adulterous practice, but they understood it to be like sort of metaphorical for not letting your kids intermarry with Gentiles and the like. So they take the simple meaning of the Torah, they reinterpret it allegorically, and that allegory, that metaphorical interpretation, is not consistent with the tradition, not consistent with the halacha, how it's meant to be. You're making it up as you go along. So here what happens is, the fifth and final, you know, most intense place where we have Kedusha manifest in the world is in the Sifrei Kodesh, in the Torah itself. So if a person looks at the Torah and doesn't see it as being something which is, you know, imbued with divine sanctity, which the rules that of the Masorah apply to, instead they see it as like, you know, there's the Homer, and there's Iliad, and there's Odyssey, and there's the Septuagint, and they can sort of reinterpret things, you know, Philo, the most significant of the classical Jewish philosophers, no from Jews even heard of him, nobody does, you know, besides his name, you know, there he is telling you, oh, Plato is in the Chumash, and you know, the Chumash was there before Plato, it's like outsmart, it preceded Plato, but Platonic philosophy is embedded in the Chumash, and that's how to read it. So that's not consistent with the Masorah. You're turning the Torah into something else that it isn't. It's not a repository of Kedusha now. It's just become like a book for a plaything for you. And again, the same like the other cases, you've taken something which is invested with Kedusha and seeing it under sort of shitchif on a surface level what it is, and therefore by divesting of its Kedusha, it doesn't become a conduit for you to now to establish a connection for yourself in Olam Haba. So in all those cases, afal pi shebiyado Torah ma'asam tovim, even if this guy has otherwise learned a lot of Torah and done a lot of good deeds, but he, you know, he actively annuls or repudiates the Kedusha that's present in Kodshim and in the Zmanim and in his fellow Jew and in himself, in his procreative ability and in the Torah. So then, Ein lo chelek l'olam haba, he now has forfeited his connection to the world to come. Rachman al-Atzlan, God forbid. An important PS, which is, as the Barthes himself speaks out, is Ein lecha davar sha'omen bifnei hachuva. Nothing stands in the way of tshuva. So even if a person is guilty of these things, he can do sincere, heartfelt tshuva, returning to Hashem, and of course that will fix things entirely, and he will definitely, in that case, have his chelek in olam haba.